Welcome to Counter Apologetics.
Welcome to Counter Apologetics. I'm your host, Emerson Green. And today we'll be discussing terrible ideas in the New Testament. Back in episode 10, we talked about how believers try to distance themselves from the Old Testament, but we didn't talk about the implicit claim that the New Testament is any better. And superficially it seems reasonable enough. Jesus never commanded genocide, after all, but that's a pretty low bar, even if God fails to get over it in the Old Testament. So we're going to go over some of the bad ideas espoused in the New Testament, and some of them are continuations of things first established in the Old Testament. For example, in Deuteronomy chapter 21, we are instructed to kill our children if they're rebellious, which is a command that Jesus reaffirms twice in the New Testament, in Matthew 15:3-4 and Mark 7:8-13. In the Old Testament, homosexuality is considered an abomination, and in Romans 1:27, it's called unnatural and shameful. And while it's pretty hard to match the sexism of the Old Testament, in 1 Corinthians 14:34 and 1 Timothy 2:12, women are instructed to be silent and are forbidden to hold authority over a man. Which, to be fair, is not as bad as murdering them for being suspected of having premarital sex, but I don't see why we should grade God on a curve. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 31, Jesus says that marrying a divorcee is adultery. This dogmatic anti-divorce position held by religious fundamentalists has multiplied abuse and misery for centuries. In Catholic Ireland, it was illegal to get a divorce, and Mother Teresa campaigned to keep forcing Jesus's morally obtuse rule on everyone through the state. Fortunately, because Mother Teresa and the church failed, men and women in unhappy or abusive relationships could hope for a better life, less plagued by unnecessary misery. In Ephesians 6:5, slaves are instructed to be obedient to their human masters. This isn't the only time slavery comes up in the New Testament, but it's never condemned. Slavery is probably the easiest big moral question we've ever been faced with, and the Bible, which is supposed to be the most morally wise book on offer, doesn't condemn owning other human beings as property. In fact, it says slaves ought to obey their masters. I wonder if it was a slave owner who wrote that. Hell is described in Matthew 13:42, Matthew 25:41, Mark 9:43, Luke 16:19, and 2 Thessalonians 1:9. What kind of crime could you possibly commit that deserves a never-ending punishment, let alone one of burning alive? This is possibly the most immoral idea in the New Testament, that punishment should be eternal. The New Testament also endorses thought crime. In Matthew 5:22 and 28, Jesus says that feeling anger is the same as murder, and that privately feeling lust is the same as committing adultery. You can be judged and punished on the basis of your private thoughts. So not only can punishment be eternal, but according to Jesus, thought crime is a thing, and you can go to hell for it forever. The New Testament encourages people to look forward to the end of the world, not just in Revelation, but in the Gospels, where it's clearly stated that the world will end any minute now. But in addition to claiming repeatedly that the end is nigh, this is supposed to be great news. Over 40% of the American population believes that Jesus will usher in the end times in the next 50 years. This means that true believers don't actually care about the future of civilization because they think there won't be one. Sam Harris, in Letter to a Christian Nation, writes, quote, "According to the most common interpretation of biblical prophecy, Jesus will return only after things have gone horribly awry here on earth. It's not an exaggeration to say that if the city of New York were suddenly replaced by a ball of fire, some significant percentage of the American population would see a silver lining in the subsequent mushroom cloud, as it would suggest to them that the best thing that is ever going to happen was about to happen. It should be blindingly obvious that beliefs of this sort will do little to help us create a durable future for ourselves. Imagine the consequences if any significant component of the United States government actually believed that the world was about to end and that its ending would be glorious. The fact that nearly half of the American population apparently believes this purely on the basis of religious dogma should be considered a moral and intellectual emergency. end quote. Another gem from the New Testament is that, according to Jesus, demons are literally real, demonic possession is a real problem, and exorcisms are the way to deal with that problem. Jesus cast out demons on multiple occasions, including in one of the most famous New Testament stories, where he casts demons out of a man who was behaving erratically and into a herd of pigs who promptly ran off the edge of a cliff. Religious moderates would scoff if you asked them if they believed in literal demonic possession, but the creator of the universe clearly thinks this is a real thing and is the cause of some human behavior. Religious moderates fancy themselves to be very sophisticated and accuse atheists of being simplistic and literalistic when we point out that demons aren't real. But the reason we no longer take demonic possession seriously as an explanation or widely practice exorcisms is not because of religious progress, it's because of scientific progress. When someone is having a seizure, we understand what's happening neurologically. You're not possessed by the devil. When someone miscarries, it's not due to demonic influence. These are two examples among many where pressure from the outside caused the religious explanations to be abandoned. Religious moderation itself is the product of religion losing the argument and losing its belief in what it once preached confidently as absolute truth. Writing in his book Mere Christianity, C.S. Lewis had a rare moment of lucidity explaining the immorality and insanity of Jesus' teachings if naturalism is true. He writes, quote, "Now, unless the speaker is God, this is really so preposterous as to be comic. We can all understand how a man forgives offenses against himself. You tread on my toes and I forgive you. You steal my money and I forgive you. But what should we make of a man himself unrobbed and untrodden on, who announces that he forgave you for treading on other men's toes and stealing other men's money? Asinine fatuity is the kindest description we should give of his conduct, yet this is what Jesus did. He told people that their sins were forgiven and never waited to consult all the other people whom their sins had undoubtedly injured. He unhesitatingly behaved as if he was the party chiefly concerned, the person chiefly offended in all offenses. This makes sense only if he really was the God whose laws are broken and whose love is wounded in every sin. In the mouth of any speaker who is not God, these words would imply what I can only regard as a silliness and conceit unrivaled by any other character in history. A man who was merely a man and said the sort of things Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. Let us not come with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us." End quote. He's actually right that if the Gospels aren't literally true, which is fairly easy to demonstrate, then they are insane and immoral. The New Testament doesn't make sense unless human sacrifice is a great way to solve your problems. Of course, it doesn't advocate going around sacrificing humans to accomplish things, but Jesus' blood sacrifice is the main event of the New Testament. The idea that human sacrifice is a good way to appease God is possibly the most obvious holdover from our superstitious and barbaric ancestors. It's amazing that otherwise educated, intelligent people can believe that a human sacrifice took place in order to solve any problem. This is no different from sacrificing a goat and expecting the weather to change.
But I think there are deformities to the pure Christian religion too, and he mentioned the name I give to one of them. A doctrine that I think is strictly immoral, the idea of vicarious redemption. The torture and human sacrifice of somebody, which if I'd been present, it would have been my duty to try and prevent, which I did not ask for, over which I have no control, that took place thousands of years, according to some, before I was born, commits me, and that I have no choice in the matter, and that my sins are forgiven by this human sacrifice. Vicarious redemption is scapegoating. It's throwing your sins onto an animal. It's an old primitive practice from the Middle East. It doesn't deserve the attention of civilized or thoughtful people.
There are some good parts of the New Testament, and there are some things that I don't hate that are in the Bible, as long as you read the stories like you would any other book. But the purpose of this episode is to shine a light on the bad stuff in the supposedly brilliant New Testament. The things that are good from the Bible are usually not unique to the Bible. Anything that can be said to be good can usually be found somewhere else and can be better articulated than it was in the Bible. Another problem is that the few bits of wisdom that are in there are usually diminished or ignored. The most obvious examples being the numerous times Jesus advocated on behalf of the poor, a sentiment that is completely inverted by today's Christians, at least in my country. If you put a gun to my head, I guess I would say that the New Testament is better, but not much better. It's not as obviously superior as is often implied. A respectable argument can be made that the evil of the New Testament exceeds the evil of the Old Testament, as Christopher Hitchens did in God Is Not Great. In any case, the New Testament is clearly not good. It would be trivially easy to improve upon it, which should be impossible if Christianity were true and the most moral being in the universe inspired it. If you've never advocated the death penalty for children, congratulations, you're more moral than Jesus. If you think men and women should have equal rights, you're more moral than Paul, who wrote most of the New Testament. If you think the end of the world would be a bad thing, you've transcended New Testament morality. We're expected to accept that Jesus was a wise moral teacher and that the New Testament is a valuable trove of morals, even if we aren't believers ourselves. But the New Testament is filled with terrible ideas. The Bible is an evil book, filled with absurdities and immorality, and we'd be better off ignoring it completely except as a document proving how wrong we're capable of being and how miserable religion is capable of making us if we take it seriously. That's all I have for you today. I'd like to thank my patrons, and I'd like to thank my Hall of Fame patron, Peach Machine. Thank you guys for making this show possible. And you can support this show on a per-episode basis at patreon.com/counter, where you can earn early access to every episode and access to bonus episodes. If you don't have the money to support on Patreon, but you still have enough faith to be an atheist, you can like us on our social media, leave a 5-star review, or tell your friends about the podcast. Our theme music was written and performed by the band Wailers. The song is called Magic Tricks and was used with permission. Thank you for joining me today. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll see you next time.